Welcome to Cityscape, a podcast by the Committee for Sydney dealing with contemporary urban challenges. Julie Wagner is the non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. She was in Sydney recently and caught up with our CEO, Tim Williams, to explain the concept of innovation districts and how they can inform urban policy.
You did a paper in 2014 about innovation and
Correct.
The geography of innovation.
Yes, I did. And I co-authored that with Bruce Katz.
Indeed, and it sort of had a bigger impact than you probably realised, because it was an impact on American cities. It was written for American cities, but we all read it around the world and became persuaded that it was describing some big trends that we thought we could see. So where did that paper come from?
The genesis actually started in Barcelona. We went there for a study tour, and we went to 22 at Barcelona.
Yeah.
Which is an innovation district, and they called it an innovation district. And because it was an effort that was so intentional, led by the city government, envisioned by the mayor, where they had a plan across multiple scales of remaking the economic landscape, the physical landscape, and literally reconverting land to create new economic clusters and include and wrap in new residents and involving them in those clusters in this very concentrated set of spaces. We said, well, this is very interesting. This is an interesting concept where you have the urbanization of innovation underway. And so we left thinking, wow, this is really new and different. But what happened was is that it actually gave us a new set of glasses through which we started to look at other landscapes the same way and recognize there was a broader trend underway.
The urbanization of the economy again, there's a kind of feel that some big international trends, previous generations of economic activity, a bit more dispersed, manufacturing could be done wherever there was coal or water, you know, then electricity, and it didn't matter where you put it. But knowledge jobs, in a way we hadn't expected, I think, are sort of much more urban, coming in from the kind of ex-urban, because there's something about the agglomeration of knowledge jobs that they require to be, you know, clever people that want to be close to each other, because that's what it's about, right? But let's go back to the moment that you wrote the piece. Did you expect the impact that piece had?
Not even. We still continue to be amazed. I mean, we've received phone calls from Buenos Aires all the way up to, you know, parts of Russia and Poland every week, really wanting to understand this concept more because they see it happening there. And finally, there's a name to it that, you know, this is not something that is planned where you're having a group of planners sitting down conceiving this notion. It is a notion that is forming itself as a creature of these broader economic forces.
In a sense, what you did was notice what had happened and then put a name to it and then started thinking through, which you've been doing since, the conditions of success for making a successful innovation district. So you've got some thinking about that. And it's an important area because some people just want to kind of put the word innovation together with the word district and think that they've got one. And actually, there are some conditions of success, I think, in the work. You've been looking at typologies and you've talked a bit about the assets that innovation districts in your analysis have. Can you say a bit about the assets?
Part of that is driven by the changing nature of innovation, which is increasingly collaborative and networked.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is giving rise and value to proximity, which is sort of a natural space in cities, right? Yeah. It's the density, it's the grid, This is sort of right. Exactly. This is sort of the natural environment for that. So let me take that and then move this into the asset piece. So when you look at, there's sort of three sets of assets: economic assets, physical assets, and networking assets. And those assets are basically facilitating this process of innovation, which is increasingly networked and collaborative. That is what's going on. So you take the economic asset. So you can have an anchor university, such as an anchor institution, such as a university. You can have a hospital and companies. You can have startups, spin-offs, accelerators, and incubators. That's interesting, but it's the relationship between those. It's the clustering and connecting that is the important piece there. And then the physical is then supporting this kind of connecting.
Yeah.
And given reason for people to cluster, because you have quality place that draws people together, where workers don't want to leave, and where workers don't want to leave at night, and residents would like to stay longer, frankly. So, and that's when you know you have something magical.
Yeah.
Right? And then the networking piece is clearly fundamental to all of this, if we're talking about collaboration. It's how and who and when you're talking to people as a means to innovate.
But it's, there's a lot in this around where innovation comes from, because we'd forgotten, I think, to some degree in the discussions about, you know, the economic discussions about innovation, that place matters. You know, cities are historically places which have enabled connectivity and sharing of ideas. So they've always been there, really. But the discussion, I think, in universities and stuff with us, you know, professional economists, they moved away from that. They became very mathematical in their understanding of economics, but actually places do matter. So we're discovering, I think, that place management, place making can be part of this, or it is a critical part now of this kind of innovation discussion. Now, in terms of your framing, which I love and everybody finds really useful, the, you know, economic
the simplicity.
Assets, it's very good, right? But you can kind of audit places.
That's right.
Saying you've got some of that, but not some of that, right?
Right.
So are people using it like that?
I mean, we're suggesting that they do that. And, you know, we've gone to ground in a number of places, right? There's one thing to conduct the research and then to sort of look down and observe and not, right, understand really what's going on. But we go to ground. We've spent a great deal of time in places to understand this. And part of that is auditing your assets along these lines, right? So let's just take the physical because you brought that up. The physical, in a lot of these cases, you have these barriers that are limiting the kinds of collaboration that we're talking about. So it could be a highway. It could be a railway, right? Which have been important in moving people, but they have become barriers to collaboration, to having different groups and teams and firms and anchors connecting in ways that they now need. And so a physical then response could be that is decking over, which is something that's being considered here in Sydney, I understand, to deck over, and then use that as a way to create a new space, a new space where people and firms and anchors can connect in new ways.
See, I think that's really important. One of the other barriers in Sydney has been radical zoning. So that we've actually separated uses significantly. So we've got a very dispersed kind of city, but we've also separated uses. So the manufacturing was over there and the residential was over there and all that kind of stuff. You're talking about a world in which the, as you, your great phrase, in the mix, it's
That's
the
right.
mix of uses that people are valuing as a place that they want to be and work.
Right.
So it sounds as though the mix of uses is quite important too.
Mix of uses is critical.
Yeah.
And it's not just the mix of uses, it's the mix of disciplines and sectors.
Yeah,
this is around what we're seeing as the convergence economy. And I really want to emphasize this point because, you know, we wrote one paragraph about this in our paper because we're like, yeah, this is interesting. But the more we've gone to ground, the more we've been reading other research, the more that we've been talking to large and small companies, and the more that we've been looking at disruptive innovations, we're finding that underpins a lot of that more and more is that you have different sectors ranging from life sciences to tech that are coming together to solve problems that seemed previously intractable. And now simply by the fact of looking at the same problem differently, you're able to make some breakthroughs.
Sounds like a critical thing. The diversity, you know, is a strength in itself. But again, it comes back to the environment. If you've got an environment in which you can mix with people with diverse skills and stuff, that's where the real beauty of this thing comes.
Yeah.
So unexpected roads are traveled by this kind of happenstance of being able to meet.
Yes.
But the serendipity of this is I think the paradox of urban planning is how you create places which have this serendipity. You know, i.e., you want to create places that enable people to meet and to exchange and all that kind of stuff.
So right.
I think for me, that's a kind of big thing. I think one of the things you were saying about this diversity idea was that that you've got world-class kind of people in a sector bumping into people that haven't yet become world-class but actually seem to be able to provide ideas that they can bounce off. That's also quite kind of a useful thing, I think.
That's correct. It's happening in so many different ways. I mean, I think you couldn't start to parcel it out. It could be just sort of random collaborations. Yeah. It could be this broader concept of open innovation, right? Or it's just simply a much broader phenomenon of convergence. And honestly, it's just, this is where we're headed.
Yeah. Last couple of things about leadership. Because some of the places you looked at, I mean, they looked as though they organically came together, and they probably, their places helped them. But there was always somebody taking a bit of a lead. Sometimes you say it was government or, you know, city government. Sometimes it was the private sector. Sometimes it was a charitable institution. It could be in a hospital or an educational institution. You've looked at we've got a couple of places that you would call out for us to have a sort of look at what's happening in terms of who's leading.
So Stockholm has sort of the European classic model of the triple helix, where you have university, government, and industry coming together. And a lot of places actually in Europe follow that model, but I have been particularly impressed in which they have realized that in Stockholm, because they came together as a unit and said, how do we exploit all the advantages that we have and creating this new relationship, both in how we're innovating, but how we're governing a specific geography of area, a specific area that has actually these actors in them. And it's just been an interesting process to watch it unfold. So that's one. Another is a mayor, a mayor-led effort. So, and there's really differences in that. One is in Barcelona, where there's incredible intentionality in terms of the vision, but also in planning and implementation, where they really remade the landscape in ways that you just simply, you'd almost have to go and see to believe.
Yeah, no, it's funny, right? I think that's a critical one, and you pointed out to us that they actually shifted their focus, because they originally thought they could just have lots of companies without, in a sense, without a place, and you know, they just wanted like incubators, and you know, they suddenly realize that actually people want to go and work in a nice place. So, you know, the streets have to be good, and the transport connections have to be good, and the cafes, bars, and restaurants have to be good. You know, that kind of stuff.
Well, it was completely disconnected because it was old manufacturing land. Yeah. The part that was so interesting around this story, I think, is that the city had these great ambitions, but they didn't own any land. So how do you take that, right? And so they upzoned, rezoned, and took parcels, and then they created sort of different kinds of workspaces for the public good, right?
Yeah.
You know, these innovation public centers, if you will, to help train and advance the economic competitiveness of the actual residents.
You were very right to stress something, which is a very relevant discussion here about giving some developers some self-interest in doing not the usual. So if you give developers more higher floor space ratios, you know, you don't get higher. But ask them, what else can you give us? You know, so you can discount that piece of land, but get more on this piece of land. We can do an economic activity there.
That's right.
Alongside residential. So there's ways of incentivizing the private sector, I think, in that discussion.
You're listening to Cityscape, a podcast from the Committee for Sydney. CEO Dr. Tim Williams is speaking with Julie Wagner, an expert on innovation districts from the Brookings Institution.
You asked about other models, so I just wanted to get to the third one, which had to do with a leader, like an individual, a catalyst, a driver, right? Obviously, the mayor is one, but they're also, it could be a hospital president, and that is the story of St. Louis, where you had someone literally stand up and say, we're losing here, and we can do better. And the part of the reason why we're losing is we're not thinking and acting as a collective. Let's do that. And and their story unfolds in a beautiful way that started really from this one catalyst. So it really can manifest in many different ways.
See, in Sydney, we've got some of the universities leading the discussion on innovation district. And it's partly because they've got land. And they're sort of looking outwards to what partners they can bring in. So we're beginning to see some of this in some very plausible areas, I think, where one of them is Ultimo, which is near the centre of Sydney. Lots of universities, cafes, bars, restaurants, public transport, near the city. It's got a bit of vibe to it, you know, and I think that works, and I think that's going to be something, you know. I kind of want to move to Sydney as we conclude the discussion. And so one of the partners to help bring you over here was actually the New South Wales government, because they are thinking through what they do next, and we've got a few options in the city. I'm not going to ask you about specific places because that wouldn't be fair. You've been here 2 days, I think. But what are the kind of issues that we should think about in terms of this, the discussion that you're leading?
Well, I am actually going to talk about a place, if you don't mind.
There you go.
I talk about a place and then we talk about some broader issues. Yeah. So literally when I landed here, I looked around to understand what your assets are. So our paper laid out, start with your strengths, right?
Yeah.
So most cities we have found have what we call an anchor plus play, which is a play around your anchor, your universities that have R&D. And so you have, in a very small geography, a couple of universities that if they are wrapped together and perhaps sort of included in the central station design, if this is sort of looked at a unit, this could be a very interesting place. Okay, so I just, as an observer that's looked at this through this lens in a lot of different places, my eye immediately went there.
See, it's funny, I agree completely, and I think sometimes, if you've only been in a place for 2 days, you can still say, if it looks like a duck and it walks like a duck, it's probably a duck, right? So it looks to us a pretty obvious proposition. The universities are there, Central's there. It's got a lot of the assets you talk
about, right? It's
so,
building from your strengths already. This is not something new necessarily, right? This is not a city plan writing down and saying, we're going to create a necessary an innovation district. Yeah. Actually, it's taking care of the market. It's harnessing the market. Now, what the market may do is take some areas that currently are underdeveloped and then make it ripe for an innovation district. And that was actually another type, which is like a waterfront or an outmoded area that just is not benefited, which was Barcelona.
Right.
But given the changing times, it lends itself now to this new kind of innovation economy.
Totally, I think. And I think also, if you've got places that are close to it, you just get
proximity,
behind it.
Proximity,
but also close to the result that we're looking for.
Yeah.
We're almost there. They just need a little push over.
That's right.
There's some urban design stuff in that area. There's a street called Harris Street, which is very fast and very wide. And I am very profoundly committed to the idea that shared streets is a good way of kind of making it a bit more intimate and a bit more attractive to the very people we're talking about. But that's not a big ask. It's doable. The rest of it is almost there, I think. And there are other places in the city that are going in the direction. But I think what you've been really very useful, and the paper was great, your presence here has really reinforced it. And you've been doing some great new work adding to the depth of this thing, right? But we kind of get a clear idea of the conditions of success. But what I think has been is great is that the you've come to Sydney at a time where there's great momentum in the city, and we can choose to be great, So there is an issue about the policy interventions required to move from good to great, Mm-hmm. The economic momentum is there, but the policy clarity and the collaborations, cities collaborate to compete. The collaborations have to be there to get the right result. But we're very close. But it also gives us a kind of sense, your work does, I think, of the steps to be taken to actually make sure that we deliver these things, And I think the last thing is to give us a realistic sense of the gap there is in some places that we think might be innovation districts, but actually are quite a long way from the line at this point in time. But, but it gives us a direction of travel as well. So I'm not just going to thank you for speaking to a Committee for Sydney event and being in Sydney, but actually helping us as a community and as a business community and government to think more clearly about this great new kind of idea, which has taken control of the urban thinking and planning, in my universe. Nobody now talks about anything else except innovation districts. That's all down to you and Bruce Katz. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.